campiella.ca virtual newsroom for this week. It's Charlie and Marty. Charlie, how has your week been? You enjoying maybe a little more downtime since the Island Games have wrapped up?
Sort of. I mean, it's kind of weird. Like, we have to figure out what we're doing with ourselves, and I don't know if we've found out yet what we need to be doing at the moment. But I mean, at least there's some soccer coming up.
And we just wrapped up our softball season, you and I,
yeah.
on Tuesday. tough way to go out. I think, was there back-to-back strikeouts?
Yeah, think? Yeah. Just kind of crumbled in the bottom of the last inning. But, you know.
In a league where you pitched yourself. I like that. So, anyways, yep. Enough about that. Let's talk about the Gold Cup draw for 2021. That happened, I believe, on Monday or Tuesday. Monday, I think. Monday. So Canada draws the U.S., Martinique, and probably Haiti. The group, I mean, people are saying it's maybe the group of death. I think at this point in the Gold Cup, you know, most groups are going to be quite difficult, especially if you look at the other ones that were selected there. Charlie, maybe let's start with Haiti, because you say probably Haiti because it hasn't necessarily been decided. So they're in the prelims, right? They're facing a couple minnows to get there.
Yeah. So basically they didn't qualify directly because they didn't do very well in the Nations League last fall. I think they came third in their group in League A. So they have to go through this little bracket thing in a qualifier. So they're going to have to play St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and then they'll play the winner of a game between Bermuda and Barbados. But all three of those teams are, well, they're not as good as Haiti. So Haiti's probably going to beat them fairly comfortably and be the fourth team in Canada's group, which is maybe not necessarily great, because we saw what they can do against Canada last time.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that they're also facing the U.S. and Martinique, right? They played the U.S. last year in Nations League and then played Martinique. Had success against both those teams, but you did like a little bit of a team-by-team breakdown there. What can we genuinely expect? Like, let's start with Martinique. Like, is there any chance for an upset there? Like, what do you see out of that team right now?
Well, I mean, if you're worried about Martinique, then you kind of have no business like having any sort of expectations from the Gold Cup. But I'm trying to lock down
at least one win for Canada in the group stage.
I think that has to be it. I mean, Martinique, like, they're not bad. They've been getting better. I know that in the last couple of years they've spent a lot of time kind of trying to recruit French internationals who might have a bit of a connection to Martinique. So they've got a few guys playing in Europe who probably hadn't really been to Martinique before they kind of played for the national team there. But it seems to be maybe trying to improve the quality of their team a little bit, but they are still, on paper at least, several tiers below what Canada should be.
Okay, the group of death, but Martinique's in it, so good news for Canadian fans. The match against the U.S. will be interesting, but as John Herdman has already kind of alluded to, we're going to see some rotated squads at the Gold Cup, because World Cup qualifying because of COVID-19 has been sort of pushed into June. And as Herdman mentioned, like, we have to prioritize to qualify for the World Cup, especially for the OCT, the new hex that has more teams in it, because there's going to be four match weeks in that June. In and around the tournament. So, I mean, the question is, like, how much of a rotated squad could we expect from Canada if they make it that far? And maybe a second question to that is the U.S., Mexico, are we going to see basically B teams at that point? Because you don't want to pull, you know, like a Christian Pulisic for two windows in a row, right? Like, it's going to make the tournament very maybe diluted. Maybe that's the wrong word.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing, though, is going to be that it's probably going to be easier to get a hold of the guys playing in Europe than it's going to be to get the players that are kind of mid-season with their MLS clubs and even CPL clubs, if that's who is getting called in the summer. It might be a little bit tough to convince a team like Bayern Munich to let you give Alphonso Davies like 10 games for the national team in 2 months, regardless of whether or not they're in season.
Probably, maybe even more. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe even more.
Yeah. 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 Probably more. So I don't know. I don't really know how John Herdman's going to approach this. I mean, there's players that you don't have replacements for. Like, I don't know if Canada necessarily has enough defenders to rotate all that much. They've got attackers that maybe they give some extra opportunities to younger guys like they did in January in California. But I don't see how you can really not have at least a fairly similar kind of defensive group for both tournaments, like regardless of whether or not you're trying to rotate a squad.
It's funny you mentioned that January camp, Charlie, because I had that written down as a potential benchmark. Like, for example, we saw, you know, quite a bit of like MLS players, but, you know, we had guys from TFC 2 and TFC, and then obviously the CPLers like Tristan Borges and Amir Didic. But maybe that seems a bit too far. That seemed like a little bit more of a depth choice. I don't know. Ultimately, it's very hard to predict, like you said, what's going to happen. And again, we don't even really know the dates for some of these games, right? So I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
very interesting.
You never really want to punt on the Gold Cup because it's an important competition that Canada's always at least valued reasonably highly. But I mean, getting into the World Cup is an entirely different level, and that's obviously going to be the priority. So I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll cross that bridge when we get there, Charlie. I think that's how that'll occur. Yeah. I'm not sure if John Herdman would say the exact same thing or not. Okay, let's switch to some CPL news, specifically the FC Edmonton coach search as it stands right now. Wrote something on CanPL.ca. We had heard of a couple different candidates being considered. Colin Miller, Sean Fleming, Ilya Orlov, and Philippe Ulafroy, I think is how you say his last name. Colin Miller and Sean Fleming, pretty obvious, names thrown forward. Sean, the current assistant coach, and then Colin Miller, the longtime coach of the Eddies. I think it was 6 or 7 years there.
Yeah.
But then the other two names are definitely the ones that caught the most eye on social media. Maybe I'll just run down quickly about who they are. So Orlov, interesting coach prospect, has a good relationship with Jeff Paulus, obviously the outgoing FC Edmonton coach. Currently the coach of University of Toronto and also Alliance United in League One Ontario, a really good League One side, I should note. And then Ulafroy, he was the Montreal Impact Academy manager for 10 years and also coached FC Montreal in the USL, which, Charlie, as you know, there's what, like maybe 10 CPLers to come out of that?
Yeah, so most of them play
well-connected. a lot of them did in the first year. I'm thinking of Zach Secunda, those kinds of guys. So maybe my question is, who caught your eye out of that list? You know, for you, who do you think would be the best fit there?
Yeah, it's kind of tough to say because, I mean, it at least from what Jeff Paulus has already told us, like it sounds like they're gonna want somebody with experience actually coaching a first team and not necessarily an academy person. So I mean, the fact that Ulafroy has coached FC Montreal, which is a professional team, is probably good, especially because he's also got the academy experience. So I think that might be, like, I think he might be maybe the most interesting possibility. And I think it would be really, really good to see him. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be a realistic option. I don't really know what Colin Miller's doing at the moment, but that would be a little strange for him to come back to Edmonton. I think it would be like if the whole idea behind Jeff stepping down is to get new voices into the touchline there, like I don't necessarily think that bringing back Colin Miller or even promoting Sean Fleming to the head coach role would necessarily achieve that. So I think the two guys that you mentioned that are the outside options, I think would intrigue me the most in that sense, if that makes any sense.
And there were a couple of names that made a little bit more of the long list that, you know, we had just kind of assembled as potential candidates, like Nick Daskovich is probably the biggest name that was excluded from that list, arguably, with Canada mm-hmm. soccer right now, a pretty decent job, but you know, they're not playing games right now. And I mean, how many head coaching jobs in Canada are there at the professional level? Not mm-hmm. very many. So you wonder if someone's head is going to get turned that's maybe like a little bit outside of that. Since that article was published, I should note that we've heard a little bit of a scoop for everyone at home. We've heard that there is like a little bit of international interest. We didn't hear any names or anything, but mm-hmm. there is a potential for a non-Canadian to enter that role as well. Anyone else you want to put forward? I mean, Martin Nash, he lives right down the highway.
Yeah, he does. And he'd be the second Nash brother to step into a head coaching role in the past couple months.
Well done.
Yeah, I don't know. I really have no idea where they can go with this. So I don't necessarily have any names to put forward like you would. I am interested like to see that they're kind of trying to cast a wide net and making sure that they pick the right person for this job, because I think that the Eddies definitely want to, like, they kind of do want to win sooner rather than later. So an experienced coach with mm-hmm. significant, probably professional experience would probably be the ideal candidate there.
All right, let's switch to something that you do know about then, Charlie. The CPL coach is looking at loans at mm-hmm. this present time. So the big one this week was Nicholas Hamilton of York 9 going to Dundee FC in the Scottish second tier. Did you know that they had signed Charlie Adam?
Yeah, is that real? Well, not until I read the press release, but yeah.
the promo shot, like, good for him. Like, he's going to play till he's mm-hmm. like 42. That's so sweet. I love it. Yeah. Blackpool legend.
Yeah, fair play to him.
Anyways, so yeah, Nicholas Hamilton goes to Dundee. Obviously, big write-up on campyall.ca. Mm-hmm. Angus McNabb, a Dundee fan, and obviously the head of York 9, so that deal sort of makes sense. But Hamilton had yet to step foot in Canada because of COVID-19 concerns, right? He missed the window to apply to get into the country by 48 hours. Or I shouldn't say missed. He was 48 hours behind Alex Marshall, who got in for Halifax Wanderers and had an incredible tournament. So too bad for him to not get into Canada, but obviously those opportunities are there. So you spoke to a couple coaches about, like, you know, could we expect more of them? And, I mean, it looks like everyone would like them to happen, but it's not as clear cut as that.
Yeah, I think maybe we might have gotten ahead of ourselves a little bit at the end of the Island Games. Whenever people were thinking about, oh yeah, like all of the CPL is going to be scattered around the world for the next few months on loan at X, Y, and Z club. And it sounds like that's just not going to happen. Like, obviously teams are working very, very hard right now. Every single team is working hard to try and get their players some kind of playing in the next few months, whatever it's going to be before the 2021 season kicks off. But it sounds like they're kind of having to prioritize a little bit which players need the time more than others. Like, I kind of asked this to Tommy Wheeldon Jr. at Calvary, and he suggested that really, like, what it is there's just more players that need football than there are clubs that want players on loan, right? So they kind of have to they have to work pretty hard to find the right fit. It sounds like for Calvary, for example, a guy like Sergio Camargo might be a player they're prioritizing to get on the pitch somewhere, just because he is a very important player there, and he didn't play very much in PEI because of his injuries. But again, like Tommy used the word saturated in terms of the transfer market right now, just because everybody's trying to get their players out on loan, and clubs overseas just, like, they aren't able to accommodate that. Like, that's not what they exist for. They're not kind of farms that you can send your players to go and develop for a little while and bring them back, right? So it is going to be tough, but I think we are going to see a few players go out on loan, but maybe not as many as we might have hoped coming out of the Island Games.
We had heard about a few specifics. There were rumors about some players going to Jamaica, a group of them. I'm not sure. Yeah, it's, and again, with COVID-19, who knows? Mm-hmm. Like, who knows who's going to, you know, going to be able to go where. We also heard some moves to England as well, which I thought was interesting. So, anyways, something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't hold out too much hope.
No. Like, there's definitely going to be opportunities that's going to be great for players. What it sounds like they might not necessarily be able to do is, I know a few clubs last year kind of had their players go out and have training stints with other clubs, especially in Europe. Like, I know Cavalry had Nico Pasquati and Dominic Zator went out and just trained with, I think it was Ross County and Real Mallorca.
Amazing combo.
Yeah.
Amazing combo.
Yeah. That dynamic duo of massive European clubs. But yeah, it sounds like they went out and just had like a couple weeks training there, but I don't think that's going to be possible this time around just because of it. It's really impossible to just show up in a country for 2 weeks at the moment and then come home and everything's fine. So it's the reality of the situation. It's kind of tough, but yeah.
No kidding. Any parting shots for this week? Any hot takes? It's been pretty relaxing, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot to be upset about until Forge inevitably goes down to CONCACAF and something outrageous happens.
Keep an eye out for that. Yeah, that's coming up. That'll be a big part of our shows in the coming weeks, getting geared up to that. We'll be talking to Bobby Smyriotis and the Forge players in the lead up to that to get everyone excited and primed up. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's it for us. Take care. See you next week.